So I now have pleasure in inviting the panel to talk. Annie Madden, who is the Executive Officer of the Australian Injecting and Illicit Drug Users League. Hey, boy, Annie, can you join us, please? Brian Dunn, the Senior Manager of Community-Based Corrections. John Van Den Dungen, as he made it. And he'll be here shortly, no doubt. And Mary, are you joining us as well? You prefer not to? Okay. I was happy to sort of override that. and Michael Levy, please, the Medical Director of ACT Corrections. There, and we have a microphone. And what I'd like to do is just give each of the panel members a chance to say just a few words first, and then we'll go to questions. Michael, would you like to start? Underneath.
The topic is prison health and public health. And Michael's spoken more specifically about hepatitis C. In Australia today, there's 25,000 prisoners. There's approximately 50,000 releases to the community from prison every year. And so from a disease control point of view, there's ample opportunity for infections to spread from the community into prison. There's equal opportunities for disease to spread between prisoners and between prisoners, staff members and their visitors. And then the other aspect is the spread back to the community. As a health service provider in prison, it's my opportunity to intervene in the in-prison component of that chain of infection. And we attempt with our hands tied as best we can. We have no control over the clients who come in. That's dictated by the courts. And as Michael said, they come with a battery of disadvantage, not just in terms of disease control, but their education, their employment, their housing. They come with a huge unmet need, which we try to address, their addictions, their mental illness, and the infections that they carry with them from which they receive in the community. But there's a component of disease transmission that's occurring in the prisons, which is undeniable, and the once again, what Michael reported was the prevalence, a very high prevalence of hepatitis C infection amongst prisoners. But what's equally disturbing, particularly to a prison health service provider, is the incidence, that is new cases, that is cases that are transmitted within the prison. And evidence that's coming out of the New South Wales prisons is now reporting that half of the total incident cases in the community for hepatitis C are being generated in the prisons of New South Wales. It would be remarkable but fantastic if ACT prison was different. We don't have the evidence to say that it is or isn't, but that does put us on notice to a massive potential problem where the prisons are in fact contributing to a disease burden. On the other hand, we do lots of wonderful things. We have a wonderful methadone program. We're starting to initiate people on hepatitis C treatments, not to a level where that's going to work on the total number of the total amount of virus that's inside, but we're on the beginning of a pathway. We've got good immunisation programs. There's no vaccine available for hepatitis C at the moment. So there's some cautionary tales, cautionary signs, and there are. My feeling working here is that the pieces of the jigsaw are there for us to assemble and to see some initiative and a huge potential to lead Australia, if not the Western world and the greater world, in what prison can achieve. And of course my interest is what it can achieve in the area of health services and improving health and access to health.
Thanks very much. And Brian Dunn.
Oh, thanks, Michael. And Michael, listening to Michael's talk and to Michael Levy made me realise what a fantastic opportunity we have in the ACT. Point after point Michael Moore made in his talk relating to prisons, I think doesn't apply in the ACT. we've actually set up a very, very new open plan prison. We've set up a prison that actually focuses on the fact that people will come into the prison with a range of disabilities, with a range of background issues, but overall people come into, people, as Michael Levy also said, people come into prison at the request or the direction of courts. Now, we recognise the backgrounds of our prison population, and right from the word go and the planning of the AMC and people here who've been part of the community reference group will know the importance that's been placed on rehabilitation from early in the piece. Now, speak very quickly about the issue of needle exchange. Needle exchange is an operational issue. My responsibility relates to addressing offending behaviours while people are in prison. Now, the needle exchange, as we know, it's an issue relating to government policy, and there will be a review of operations of the prison, and the government will make a view eventually on whether there is an NSP in the AMC. What I'd like to concentrate on, however, is that we're meeting the challenge of our offending residents with a range of intensive, extensive and expensive interventions. We've got a rehabilitation process that is really comprehensive, where we can guarantee every prisoner is being assessed for the range of offending behaviours. We then match that against how we can intervene in order to focus on release. Now, there are a couple of asides that might display my position or not. I've spoken recently to a couple of young Indigenous prisoners. I've actually known them for about 12 years, and they're in their mid-20s. You see them again, they've serious drug and alcohol issues, they come into custody, they clean up, they look great, and they will tell you, I'm getting out soon and I'll probably get back to it. Now, our focus, and it's an important focus in relation to prison health, absolutely acknowledge that, 100%. But our program rehabilitation focus at the AMC is providing people who have serious drug and alcohol issues, and we mentioned the high incidence of people with Hep C infection, and my non-professional knowledge is that Hep C and drug use are highly connected. Our aim is let's focus on the issues of addiction. And our resources are quite, as I said, are quite extensive, and there are assessment programs operating as we speak in relation to our therapeutic community, the aim of which is to go the hard distance in order to resolve drug and alcohol addiction. I'm not minimising or trivialising needle exchange programs. I see that as a process of the first 12 months or 18 months of operation of the AMC, but it's important when we're talking about prisoner health to acknowledge the problems we've got, and then to let you know what we're doing. Every prisoner coming to the AMC has undergone an OH&S program in relation to living in communities. Prisons in the AMC plan, for people who may have seen it, consists of community living. We've got sentenced cells, and we have cottages. If you're going to work with people for post-prison, where they come back into the community, help people to aim for living in community-like conditions in the prison where we can focus on their offending issues, many of which impact on drug and alcohol. Now, that's I'm very proud and confident of the direction we're heading in relation to dealing with the offending issues of prisoners.
Thanks, Brian. Nanny Matt.
Wow, there's a lot of issues that have been raised by Michael and the previous two speakers, and it's a little bit difficult to know exactly where to start as the person kind of sitting here representing drug users and a vast majority of people who are in prisons. And I want to sincerely acknowledge that I think there are some really good things being done with the new prison. It's good to hear them being discussed openly and that it's being thought about, and people are working hard to put an effort into new programs and new approaches, and I genuinely hope that there are good results from that, because that is about my community essentially. So know, I think that's really commendable. Having said that, I suppose the thing that I hear, though, is you know, that a lot about what the prison is doing and what you guys are doing, sort of with respect, it's actually not about you. And that's what's missing for me, is that actually dependency and all the issues that go with dependency are very much about the person and their needs and their desires and their world. And we know that most of the people in prisons are there for very short periods of time. Most of them are there for drug-related offences, but they're there for very short periods of time. And it's not about saying to girls, you know, not to try the things that have been tried, because I think we have to try everything. But the reality is that prison often is a forced treatment for people. It's not an option. They're not choosing that. And that, we know from all of the evidence, is really, really important in successful treatment outcomes. So I think that's something just to keep in mind. And I genuinely mean, I'm not, you know, trying to sort of be disparaging about what's being done, but I think there are some real realities here that make it very difficult. And people do go back to their own real worlds with all the pressures and challenges that are in that, but don't go away. They're there when they leave, and they're there when they come back, by and large. Not for everyone, but for the vast majority they are. And as a society, we're not doing enough in the community to address those issues. So I think one of the things for prisons is that we sometimes, I think, look way too much at prisons to be able to solve things that really are right down at the end of the line by the time you get into prison, you know. So there's something, there's another message in there. Sorry, I'm probably going on about that too much. Anyway, just two other points I did have in my mind to make. One was that recently ABLE did a report that was commissioned by the Commonwealth on cleaning of injecting equipment. And as you can well imagine, this has real relevance for prisons. It's unfortunately extremely relevant for the broader community as well, but it's very relevant in prisons. And because of the profile of what happens, so because most people are there for drug-related offences, because they're very short sentences, because we've got high levels of recidivism and people coming back in and out of prison and into the community, using in the community, using in prison, you know, we've got this cycle happening. And what's happening for some people is that, and this came out of our research for this report, was that people, there's a whole group of people who start injecting in prisons. And so they learn their injecting practice in prisons. And this is a big issue for young Aboriginal men. Not all, of course. There are lots of experienced injectors that find themselves in prisons repeatedly, but there's also people who aren't injectors there. And so we've got people who are learning to inject in prisons with the most harmful kind of practice they could possibly learn. Then we've got people who are experienced injectors who actually have had the benefit of harm reduction services and education and can't put that into practice in prisons. So we've got both groups of people engaging in very high-risk practices in prisons. And because there's no access legally, openly, to needles and syringes in prison, so they're a very short supply. Because bleach is either not good access, or there's limited or access that prisoners are afraid to access bleach, it means that what we discovered was that there's this new sort of practice starting to happen of using hot water to clean needles and syringes. Now, in terms of blood-borne viruses, that is a really risky practice, because it coagulates the blood in the bottom of the syringe, any blood that is there, and creates a perfect environment for the survival of blood-borne viruses rather than getting rid of them or cleaning. So it's, you know, I think we too often think that it's prisons and community, but actually prisoners are learning these things in prisons and they're bringing them out into the community. My final comment would be, you know, how long is long enough? ABLE has, in terms of needle and syringe exchange in prison, ABLE has a policy statement on this that we've had since 2002. That was preceded by a statement from 1999. So there we go. 10 years at least we've been discussing this issue. I think we've had enough discussion. The evidence is in. 60 programs in over a dozen countries. Australia is just so behind the eight ball on this. We need to address it. And we just need to ask, you know, how much is an appropriate amount of time to wait? How many infections are enough? How much drug-related harm is enough? When do we as a community say to our politicians, actually, we want this to happen right now?
And we'll now go to, we do understand it's 1:30 that people do have to go to work, and we appreciate that. But if there are any questions from the floor, I'll start from the back there, yeah.
One of the human rights defenders is not to be forced to undergo experimental treatment. As most societies throughout history and prehistory have used whatever drugs are available to them, and prohibition has been around for only 150 years or so, isn't prohibition itself an experimental treatment? And wouldn't you say it's a failed experiment?
That's a different ways to look at it. It's coming out from the other direction completely. I think what you're saying is certainly not inconsistent with anything that I said, but I don't know that I would have operated from that direction. Look, I think I have to say that in our communities, in prisons, there has been a prohibition on a whole range of things for a long time. I do appreciate where you're coming from, and I do think that though what we really need to do is to take action, because we know what health treatment is needed. Somebody else want to make a comment on that? I would just introduce John Van Dungen. John, would you just like to, if you've got a moment, just say a few words first, or would you like to perhaps wrestle with that question as well, whichever way you'd like to do it? We've given just a broad, each of us have given a broad 2-minute overview of how we see the issues of, and particularly a needle and syringe program in prisons.
Yeah. I just apologise for more than my late entrance. I've always want to speak from an Indigenous perspective, struggles, but you know, it's, within the Indigenous community, we have a lot of health issues and problems, you know, already, and then to contribute injecting drug use and the issues that are associated with it. You know, it's a lot to handle, and have to you know, develop proper programs or ways of dealing with this new issue, I guess, for Indigenous people. And the question, can I get the question
answered? The question was, by and large, if I can say, well, yeah, that the prohibition itself is something that's relatively new, and so it's experimental, and actually we're, we operate back the front. Is that a fair way to say it? We operate back the front. We shouldn't be considering prohibition of things like needle and syringe programs and so forth applying in prisons. We should be saying communities have always moved them. We should be assisting people rather than trying to just ban them, even in prisons. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, as you know, child is already operating in needle and syringe programs in there. We should be allowing the voice to be able to, not condone it, but at least give them the means and the tools to be able to do it safely without injuring themselves and without passing on any other blood-borne viruses. And especially for young people that are coming in there that are first time, it puts them at, you know, at an extreme higher risk of catching or contracting BBVs. So, you know, I think the healthcare system within the prison needs to be, you know, pretty much the same as what the conduct is offered out here. Because in the end, they're going to be back in the community anyway, and it affects us. We need to make sure that we can, you know, provide the right services for these people while they're in there. It's also a great opportunity to be able to do so while they're in there. You know, you've got their full attention, and you're able to work with them. You know, they're thinking straight. They've got, you know, the but you're able to work a lot more closely and work with them to be able to work with them and get a better outcome for these clients, especially, you know, considering some of the circumstances that they're dealing with.
So I'll go to the next question, because we've just got about 6 or 7 minutes to go, so I do want to take the next couple of questions. Anybody else like to indicate? So I'll take your question. I'm just looking around for others. So start again.
My name is Tania. I work for Hepatitis Australia, and also I'm the chair of the ACT Hepatitis Research Centre. My question is to Mike and Lydia and Brian. We hear two views basically today, and we've been here with them for a long time. One side is NSP needs to be in prison. Our side is done. We don't need it. AMC is a better place. We're going to violate. We're going to avoid and we'll do our best to reduce the harm associated with injecting. What do we need to do to help all stakeholders make a decision one way or another about AMC adoption of NSP? Thank you.
Well, the ACT government's made it clear that it wants to wait 18 months for the centre to be fully operational, and it became fully operational on the 1st of June of this year. So it wants to demonstrate to the community, to government, that it can or cannot be drug-free, and they're the words that government's been using, and then consequent on that, decisions will be made. That's the government position.
Are we publishing any reports about drug use in NC?
There certainly will be information exchange between the two departments, ACT Health and ACT Corrective Services, about contraband fines and about the results of our testing program for bloodborne viruses, both of which I expect would inform the government's decision. I think, but I'm not certain, I think that they will find their way into the annual reports of ACT Corrective Services and ACT Health.
Right. If we can keep our answers pretty tight, because we've got four.
So if I can just advocate that there is a government policy decision, but in the meantime, we are upping the ante on what I presume all intravenous drug users want, and that's education and assistance. I mentioned OHNS programs, I mentioned emphasis on community living, and interventions.
The next question can go.
Slice of Rosenberg from Alcohol and Drug Foundation for the ACC. Really followed on Samir's question a little bit, and particularly I think the issue that Annie finished on in terms of evidence. And I guess Michael's point about the apparent rain of new cases being generated in some of prisons. I'm wondering what are the international evidence saying, if we have that information, about the comparative rate of transmission of hepatitis C and other bloodborne viruses in prisons that have medical switch programs versus not, say, in the same country.
It's an interesting question, but it might not be the right question. Because we're dealing with a population that is hyper-infected, and so the opportunities for infection are limited. Having said that, on the other side, this is what I said previously, that incident cases and prison's role in generating incident cases at the community level is enormous. What it does mean is that the capacity to detect a difference between a prison with a syringe exchange and one without, it would have to be a massive study. And no such study has been conducted, and I can't imagine that the prospect of that happening. It would have to be a multi-centred trial. That would require the agreement of many countries, of which only 12 in the world have agreed to have them on other evidence, and that's why I say it might have been the wrong question. The justification for syringe exchange in prison is an acknowledgement that there isn't a syringe exchange happening in most prisons in the world, that drugs are getting in, and as it's contraband injecting equipment. And so the discussion is actually about a regulated syringe exchange as against an unregulated syringe exchange. The fact that it is a human service in the community, and why should people be denied it in prison, is a human rights issue. And the issue that Annie identified, two subgroups in the prisoner injecting population, that is the new initiate who gets initiated into bad practices in an environment of desperation. And the second group is a person who's been able to functionally access services in the community, which are now made clandestine contraband in the custodial setting,
authority. And so there are reasons other than just the epidemiology of hepatitis C.
Of course, I think Michael's answered that very well. Did anybody want to add something to it? And he does, yep.
Yeah, just a very quick point that some of the evidence that is really persuasive is around occupational health and safety issues for prison staff.
The next question, I think, is...
It's been
answered, and there was somebody over here. Yes.
Hello, Anne Love from the Lytton Camp Hospital. There's one comment, and I'm listening to what's being said today, and it's incredibly encouraging, and I'm absolutely terrified, because there's only me. So I would hope that the ACT government is going to commit to increasing access to treatment and the staff who deliver the treatment, because that will create a huge access block. My other comment was to Michael Levy that maybe we have a golden opportunity with AMC, because we know people are tested when they come in for hepatitis C, so that's identified, so we also know when they don't have it. And maybe we can actually put a case to the government that these people are being infected whilst in prison.
Get that evidence. Yeah, it would be a very sad thing if you're able to build your whole pyramid of bureaucracy. From a bureaucratic point of view, we would understand it, but the health implications are just awful. Yeah, thank you for that comment.
Do anybody want to add a comment to that?
Yes.
I'd like to say one thing I think Michael would agree too. We actually don't know the, we know New South, what Michael mentioned, New South Wales experience. With the ANC, we don't know the infection rate that's picked up yet. It would be fantastic to have a trial where people are tested when they come in, when people are tested when they come out, scrub the identification data, and then you'll get some simple figures saying X percent never appeared to acquire it, Y percent did acquire it. And at that point, we could then have some solid data, which would then affect our policies and our procedures. But in the meantime, we continue our interventions, and our original focus is reducing offending behaviour, so that when people leave prison, they can rejoin the community as productive and happy members and contribute to community safety.
There is one other factor, of course, that I think none of us have mentioned, that perhaps is just understood. The most successful way, of course, is to try and keep people out of prisons. And remembering that for some reason we seem to have been increasing the number of people that we incarcerate, the percentage of people that we incarcerate. So actually that's really goal number one, and I guess we all actually understand that. I'd like to say thank you very, very much, first of all, to Mary Porter, the Deputy Speaker, for facilitating today. Thank you so much, Mary. For Robin from Hepatitis C Resource Centre, how fabulous, and to our panel in particular for providing those sorts of insights. Thanks, everybody. Greatly appreciate you coming. Let's keep the steam.